Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the next installment of your favorite FCK podcast. It is September 15th.
Yes, September 15th. Today we are recording live. However, we're going to be going over some material that we had prepared for the previous 2 weeks. So for the 1st through the 14th, I had caught a bad batch of chicken last week and was out all last week, having awful things going on in my stomach, and was unable to record. So we wanted to make sure to get this all caught up. We had some quality stuff to bring to you guys today, and wanted to make sure we get that out there before we move on to this week and other current topics.
For sure. That'll be in a not to be mentioned Northwest food chain was the cause, but I'll tell you what definitely was not the cause was this third shift Amber Lager Band of Brewers, fueled by this podcast is fueled by me drinking water.
Yeah, it is also not was also not caused by this fantastic Coney Brewing Company Fire Rock Pale Ale. They're inviting me to visit their brewery and pubs whenever I visit Hawaii, and you know what? Been there once, and I'd like to go. I mean, been to Hawaii once, not to this, not to their brewery there. But it's pretty smooth, smooth sipping.
And of course, you know, a couple shots of the good Sir Jameson. But let's go ahead and get things started with college football.
Let's do that. You know, with the hibernation is over. Football season is here in full effect. You've got both college football having already kicked off, and the NFL kicking off. Just real quick to lead off, regards to college football, I couldn't help but give props to North Dakota State. Bowl subdivision schools, you got to stop paying North Dakota State hundreds of thousands of dollars to come to your house and beat your ass.
Man, but shout out to the FBS schools stepping it up, man, because I love seeing that. What up to Appalachian State? Back
yes,
in the day, what was that, 2007 when they beat Michigan?
Yeah, went into the big house and did Michigan. Yeah, it's this is North Dakota State is legit. I mean, they're one of those FCS schools that has been, you know, towards the top, you know, in the standings there in the pecking order for quite some time. So this year's victim was Iowa State. In 2013, they beat Kansas State. 2012, they beat Minnesota. 2011, they beat Kansas.
Wow.
So, I mean, they're not beating major powerhouses, but, dude, they're rolling into a BCS conference 4 years running and getting the job done.
I liken that, and I apologize, I believe I mixed that up. They're an FCS school, but I liken that to a boxer jumping a weight class. You know, and in this case, an FCS school jumping and beating an FBS school is like a boxer jumping two or three weight classes. You know, because you think about that in terms of scholarship opportunities.
Oh, and for sure.
And it's North Dakota State, man. Like, who wants to go play in North Dakota?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. You know, with the local tie there would be, you consider North Dakota State is probably a bigger draw than Washington State. You talk about being out in the middle of nowhere.
Man,
I mean,
how are you gonna do my alma mater like that?
I mean, I'm just saying though, man. In terms of football, I think North Dakota State could probably beat Washington State at this point, both in recruiting and on the field.
Maybe
not recruiting. I mean,
I don't know,
a little bit of a stretch, but
I don't know enough about North Dakota State to make a real accurate call on that. But here's what we do know. I'm a fan of Mike Leach, and this is his third year at WSU. So he'll have next year, you know, I don't really have a horse in the 12-pack race, but next year we'll see all of Mike Leach's, you know, all of the fruits of his recruiting efforts in play at Washington State University. And I honestly think that their air raid offense can work in the 12-pack just because there's no defense other than Stanford.
Yeah, I agree. And I do like Leach is one guy that when he got on the rumor watch for being one of the potential coaches there at Washington State, I was really excited for that. I mean, I like you said, I also like his style of offense. I like the way that that his teams run. It reminds me of those, you know, those high flying Texas Tech teams that he had, and it looks like he's going to be able to, like you said, you know, 3 years in, he's nearing a full complement of players that are used to the system that he likes to run offensively and defensively. So, you know, should be looking for some good things coming up, you know, in the next couple of years now that he's got that, you know, that that roster worked out.
Who was Danny Amendola was Texas Tech, right?
I think so. Recent receivers I can think of, Crabtree is a Texas Tech alum.
Oh, shit, Crabtree?
Yeah, Crabtree was there. The current coach at Texas Tech, Kingsbury, Cliff Kingsbury, played quarterback there. I mean, they had all sorts of guys. I mean, that was, you know, we talked about Hawaii in a previous episode. I mean, that was basically what they were, you know, what they were doing as far as just putting up ridiculous numbers with that, you know, with that air raid offense and, you know, just slinging the ball around 50 plus times a game. So as far as North Dakota State goes, I just looked it up real quick. They don't play any FBS teams next year. So you got the FBS has a one year
reprieve.
Yeah, to kind of get their shit together before North Dakota State comes calling again. Next time they'll match up, it'll be against Iowa in 2016. So Iowa, is that Kirk Ferentz still over there, still coaching?
I have no clue. I don't really pay attention to the Midwest.
I mean,
schools,
Iowa, you are on the clock. Get your shit together. North Dakota State's coming.
I think it's a shame that they're not going to play anyone in 2015 because they've got a four-year streak going here. Like, at least keep the streak going, you know?
Yeah, and another little stat that I'm looking at here. North Dakota State currently owns the nation's fourth longest active winning streak against FBS schools. I mean, of course, you've got other, you know, other big names. You got Florida State currently leading at 15 games. The now defeated Michigan State had a 10-game winning streak. So, I mean, this is a nice little stretch. This isn't a total fluke. I mean, you can fluke maybe once, maybe twice, 5 years in a row. You know, it's credit where credit's due. That's a solid little team they got going on out there, North Dakota State. Shout out to the Bison.
The Bisons. Is it the Bisons or Bison?
I see it as Bison. I don't know if they stick to Bison, like Bison Dele.
Is it like one Bison or is it like many Bison?
Well, I mean, I would assume that it's multiple Bison.
Because if it's multiple Bison, then it's the Street Fighter 2 boss.
There you go. There it could be. You know, that's you know, they're over there scissor kicking the opponent and cheesing it up.
So what else happened in college football? We've been gone for a couple weeks. That Michigan State call didn't really work out for me there. My bad.
You know, and I was really hoping that was going to work out. You know, and again, you know, for me, I'm always one to give credit where credit's due. Oregon did what they needed to do. You know, they faced a good defensive team. And they got the job done, man. I mean, you know, at some point you do have to give credit, you know, to that Oregon team. And you know, they went and took care of business on week two.
Yeah, that offense sure looked legit, especially against the mighty Wyoming Cowboys.
Yeah, and we get into week three. I mean, what they had some wrinkles that they need to iron out. I tuned in to watch the travesty that was the Georgia South Carolina game. And maybe we'll hit on that soon. But you know, I saw the score come across the bottom, and it was like a one score game for quite some time before Oregon finally pulled away. So they definitely could be facing one of those situations where they've got complacency issues. You know, where the bar sets so high for them that now they're starting to overlook, you know, teams during the regular season, especially when you're going outside of the conference and going to a non-BCS school, you know, and playing a team like Wyoming.
I think it holds really true in college football that teams tend to play down to their competition or play up accordingly. It's one of those things, man. Like, that's why you see games like you know, why Oregon won't pull away from Wyoming until absolutely necessary. Or who did Memphis play and almost beat, man? It was an SEC team. Dang, it's so hard to think back.
Probably somebody, was it like a Vanderbilt type or something like that?
No, it was...
Let me try to take a look real quick.
It was Memphis. It was week two. But we'll get that stat here. Stat guy, can you check on that? Thanks, appreciate it.
So, While I'm looking that up, another topic I wanted to hit on was our boy Nick Chubb, 5-star recruit, tailback at the University of Georgia, coming in doing 5-star recruit things.
Herschel Walker lookalike.
Looking like Herschel Walker. You know, when we get the Instagram up, maybe we'll post it to the Facebook so you guys can have a point of reference. The reason we reference Herschel Walker, I mean, one, his body style and his running style is very similar, but he's also a track guy, and there were pictures that circulated with him running on like the 100 meter dash or the relays or something like that, and he, you know, his body build looks, you know, very stunningly similar to one Herschel Walker, who, you know, was a pretty decent running back, you know,
he
back
was
in
right.
his time. So just looking at Nick Chubb, he actually just went and had surgery. Shout out to Mom's Old Hospital, St. Mary's, the official hospital of the Georgia Bulldogs. Non-sponsored plug there, by the way.
St. Mary's healthcare system. It's no longer hospital.
Oh, there you go. I'm sorry. My apologies. Doing the city of Athens and surrounding Athens-Clark County, great things there in the medical field. Anyway, he just had surgery today on his thumb. I guess there were some there was a fracture he had previously had in practice, so there were some screws that need to be tightened up, something like that. So I think he's gonna miss the game against Troy. We should be okay without him. You know, still got a decent stable of backs behind.
I think we'll be okay
Chubb.
With the three-headed dragon that we still have.
Yeah, we should be all right there. The one reason that I wanted to bring him up, I mean, one, he does look legit. Got a great highlight. Man, here's one thing we should do. I'll try to throw that up on YouTube again as a reference. We'll throw it online at some point so you guys can check it out. But he had in week one, he had some great, you know, runs. One was highlighted. It was like a 40-something yard scamper where he broke a tackle and then just eased his way into the end zone. So looking like a young Todd Gurley is what it looks like to me. He's currently leading the SEC in yards per carry, something ridiculous like 14 yards per carry. Granted, he hasn't
small
run the ball.
Size.
Yeah, very small. He's only had 8 carries so far, but he's run for 104 yards already. So in 8 touches, or 8 carries rather, he's already hit for over 100 yards, 13 yards per carry.
So I'm thinking he's a real thumper, right? And it only serves the purpose to go ahead and give him the nickname of Nick Bruiser. Shout out to Super Punch Out,
Nick Bruiser.
Or I was thinking before we recorded this, Nicholas Chubinski, you know, but he's not really Polish.
There you go. Oh, real quick, don't mean to cut you off. That Memphis game, they almost beat UCLA in week one.
Oh, that's right. It wasn't even an SEC team. It was UCLA. What was the final?
It was 35-42.
See, that's what I'm saying. It's a 1-score game. And, it, you know, teams get caught in playing down to the competition. And, you know, funky stuff happens, man.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's, you know, that's the beauty of college football. That's why I like it needs to stay. I was just reading. I finally got my hands on the Phil Steele Bible, College Football Guide. And I was reading Phil Steele's take because he had been championing having a playoff system for like 20 years, I'd say. It's the 20th year of his publication, and he's probably been talking about it for at least 10. He's been talking about it ever since I remember reading the first guide.
Since I've been reading it as well, so yeah, it's at least 10 years.
Yeah, so he was talking about how and everybody knows this already is that there's already talk about we got to get this playoff system expanded to 8. That's like seems like a foregone conclusion that even though they have, you know, I don't know, 10 plus years locked in at this 4-game. You know, set up. They're gonna blow that up and expand on it, and probably get it to at least 8. You know, once they see the money start flowing in. You know, from these bowl games and the run to a championship.
I think 8 makes sense because then you're still looking at 8-4-2. So it's essentially a 3-week tournament. playoff bracket, whatever you want to call it. I think 16, then you're expanding to 4 weeks. You know, so, I mean, right now there's 3 weeks between the last, the championship round and the Natty, right?
I think so. And, yeah, there's... It almost seems like it's less time than that, because it seems like some of the random bowl games start showing up not long after the championship games, the conference championship games are played. So,
but anyway, getting back to that UGA game that we were talking about, I wouldn't call it a travesty, but. I wouldn't necessarily count us out of the playoffs either, as long as we can win the SEC championship. But we're banking on the fact that South Carolina loses another conference game.
And I think they will.
I want to say they have Auburn. They have Florida on the schedule. And maybe Missouri.
Yeah, Missouri's on the same side. So, yeah, so they're going to play Missouri. They've still got a long road. It would have been nearly... They would have been pretty much out of the East race had they lost to Georgia. It would have basically been a 3-game deficit that they would have had to make up, because they would have been down 2 games heads up in the conference, and then they would have lost a tiebreaker because they already lost one conference game in week one, but then that smoked by Texas A&M.
A&M bumped them, man. They put up like 52 on them.
Yeah, it got ugly in a hurry. And that's the thing. I mean, again, you talk about the unpredictability of college football. I mean, that was, I guess Vegas had it right. I mean, they had the line sitting close to, within like a touchdown or so, pretty much all week leading up to the game. You can call me a homer, but I honestly felt that Georgia was going to be able to at least, slowly exert dominance on the game, just like they did against Clemson. But that breakthrough just didn't happen, and instead they were having to catch up most of the game. I mean, they went into halftime looking like crap, so that did not exactly go according to plan.
There was a couple of really bad calls and a couple of maybe offensive calls that weren't necessarily well advised, but in the end, we had plenty of chances to put that game away, and you can't really put it all on Morgan's shoulders.
No, I didn't even think that. I thought it might come back to bite us, when he missed that second one. But, it's as the saying goes, don't be in that position where that missed field goal is what cost you. We had chances. We just talked about it, this afternoon. The Mike Bobo call. And, it just gets me. And, I'm about to go on a little rant on it, but it really got me mad about how it's first and goal at the 4-yard line. We have a Heisman candidate at tailback.
A legitimate Heisman
candidate. Yeah, this isn't like, he's got an outside chance. This is a guy, he had a run earlier in the game, or maybe it was later that game, where it was a pitch left, it was blown, he cut back right, and still managed to get like 15 yards and get the conversion on like a third and long. It was ridiculous. What I'm getting at...
Talking about the stretch play?
No, well, I don't know if it was really a stretch play. It wasn't like that full-on like power sweep that they like to run.
Okay, see, I was thinking the stretch play where they tried to stretch it out left and he wound up bouncing it back right and gaining about 15 yards.
I think that might be what we are talking about, the same thing. Point is, the guy's got ungodly amounts of talent. We're 4 yards out of taking the lead and basically deflating that entire stadium and swinging the momentum, fully, even more so, into Georgia's side of the fight. And on first and goal, Mike Bobo calls up a fake pitch to the left, and then what looked like a naked bootleg right, and he was gonna, dump the ball off to Quavon Hicks, the H-back, who was going, who was gonna be, doing like a short, out to on the right hand side. But the thing is, I don't know, man. All you got to do, I think it's one of those situations where you don't need to overthink the situation. Just turn around, hand the ball off, and let Gurley get the 6, and then we move on.
I agree. To an extent. The thing with that, I'm gonna take Bobo's side on this. Quavon had the hot hand on that entire drive. He broke two fullback blasts for, I don't know, 30-something yards.
He did have some nice runs.
He broke one for about 20, one for about 10. I don't remember the exact stats. And in that case, they're expecting you to run the ball. South Carolina had been attacking the interior of our offensive line the whole game. So, I mean, it just makes sense to go ahead and run that play action. But one thing I want to bring up is that fourth and inches call was one of the worst calls. And I'm watching the game. I didn't get to watch it till Sunday. I had to DJ a wedding on Saturday and put myself into a sports vacuum for about 18 hours. Since when was a first down the last link of the chain?
Yeah, I'd never heard that before. And when I
saw, no one's ever heard that before.
Yeah, when the commentators were talking about it, they were talking about, hey, you need to watch the line judge's right foot, because where he puts that down is where they're going to mark the ball. So I'm sitting there watching that thing, and he was before. I mean, they spotted the ball pretty much where his foot was, and on the replay with the first down line, it was behind the line.
Exactly.
But yeah, I never realized that you didn't have to put the nose of the ball beyond the actual pole, the post.
That's because you do.
Yeah, apparently you just need to put it beyond the last link.
No.
And that, to me, not even beyond the last link, it just needs to touch the last link. It's like, dude, how much easier? It's like, well, you know what, you just need to snap the ball and you're going to get the first down, is what it seemed like they were just excusing. And it that was ridiculous to me.
If it was the last link of the chain, then why would we even have a pole? Why wouldn't we just have a chain?
Yeah, that was, to me, that's why, to me, it was a travesty. I mean, we follow up the failed, I mean, it just went downhill. Here's the thing, and maybe I am being harsh on Bobo. I try not to criticize him. He has had a long history of just those calls. I'm tired of seeing, I really get tired of seeing the third down and long, the halfback draw, that random screen pass to like a tight end, or like a screen pass to the, you know, to a halfback. Stuff that, you know, we talked about. I'm not dialing up a fake pitch and then a bootleg right and then a dump off to the fullback or tight end or H-back in Madden or NCAA. Why he chose to do it in a live situation where, you know, where it really matters, you know, and, you know, poor, I can't even think of his name right now, the quarterback.
Hudson?
Yeah, poor Hudson Mason. He looked like a deer in headlights. He turns around to throw the ball, and he's got a defensive lineman in his face. Because, I mean, I think that was how it was drawn up. You want that lineman to crash in, and then you want to throw the ball past him. You know, and then, of course, he's going to – if the play works, obviously, Hicks is going to run in without a guy within 5 feet of him, and Bobo looks like a genius. But, you know, he didn't have to risk that much to look like a genius. He could have looked like the dumbest guy on earth, and we could have had, you know, we could have had a 4-point lead.
Yeah, I don't know, man. So. It's hard to say. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but I'll tell you what, and this will be the last thing I say about it, but you know who Hudson Mason reminds me of? Kurt Warner from, like, what was that, 2002, The Greatest Show on Turf, when he was just throwing to a spot on the field. And no one was standing there, but Torrey Holt would just go run up underneath it and catch it.
Yeah, I do like. It seems like that is definitely his bread and butter. You know, the timing routes is what he likes to thrive on. So there is a lot of hope there. I mean, we are still operating without our full complement of receivers. For all the talent that we have at running back, Conley is the only guy that's there right now.
Bennett's dope. Well, I like
Bennett. Bennett's there, but, you know. It doesn't help that we don't have Malcolm Mitchell and we don't have Justin Scott Wesley.
Right.
That hurts, you know. So, you know, like you said, there's still hope for, you know, going into the, it's just two games in. So there's plenty of time to right the ship. We'll see as the weeks unfold. So
you know who had a horrible week? Not only Atlanta sports fans, NFL fans in general had a terrible week last week.
Yeah, Roger Goodell had a couple of weeks so far to remember. How should we set this up? Okay, let's start it with this. Ray Rice, that's kind of what got this whole ball rolling with domestic violence. So, you know, Ray Rice has the whole thing with, you know, with the spouse, the elevator incident, and, you know, Goodell, to me, and pretty much in all estimation, I would say, he misplayed the suspension. He got, what, 2 games?
He tried to, yeah, 2 games initially. It
one for
like,
each fist that he put on his fiance.
Man, it looked like Goodell was honestly just trying to sweep this one under the rug to me. I mean,
I agree.
It came out, and I'm pretty sure, I don't remember the source, but it came out from a credible source that the NFL received the film. Ray Rice's people, when he came out and owned it, he straight up said, listen, here's what happened. I knocked her out, and yeah, here's the tape. And we didn't hear anything else about it until Goodell handed out that puny little 2-game suspension. And then all of a sudden, TMZ goes and punks the NFL and puts out this video for the whole public to see. And Goodell's like, oh, shit, I might want to hand out a real penalty.
Yeah, because then he gets the indefinite suspension, and then he gets cut from the Ravens. So, I mean, here's the things in place so far. You got Ray Rice, you know, on his own accord, is doing things that he shouldn't be doing, which is very contrary to how he had been portrayed previously. You know, stand-up citizen, role model, you know, great guy overall. Never really had issues. Then all of a sudden, he's out here knocking his fiance out, you know, in an elevator. So you got that part. Then you got Roger Goodell looking like, well, what is he doing? I mean, it was bad enough when it looked like, all right, he's being a little light-handed, slap on the wrist, you know, kind of thing, with a 2-game suspension. When you just got, yeah, and here's another little angle to it. When he just got done suspending Flash Gordon for an entire year, for his third offense. So I mean, again, it's hard to compare. I mean, I think the repetitive dumbassery would merit a lengthier suspension. The thing is, to be certain, make sure you understand this. It's a whole calendar year, so they dragged it out well past, you know, like 3 weeks in the training camp. So when he comes back next year, he's going to be way out of the mix. He's going to be completely unconditioned. He's going to miss out on so much time.
Tucker, Ray Rice, or Gordon?
Josh Gordon. So he's out until like week 3 of next year's training camp.
Right.
He's got a long way to go as far as making up, you know, time that that you're going to need to get on the right page with whoever your starting quarterback is, whoever your offensive coordinator may be, you know, things of that nature.
The good news is that Josh Gordon will have a job to return to, theoretically.
He should, yeah.
Ray Rice won't.
Somebody's going to give him another chance.
You think so?
I think so. I bet you Dallas or somebody like that.
Oakland?
You know what? Yeah, Oakland would do it. I bet you New England will do it. You know, team like New England, they'll be the ones, and they'll get the pass. They'll get the Patriots pass. Well, they'll say, "Well, hey man, yeah, they're rehabbing a dude's image, and it seems like it works for them for the most part."
I catch you be running like Randy Moss.
Yeah, look at Randy Moss did okay when he went there. Corey Dillon was kind of checkered when he came out there.
Aqib Talib's
there. Right, he rehabbed himself, got himself a little fat contract after playing within the system and, you know, playing it smart there in New England. You just need to not be drafted by the Patriots.
Apparently. But I have faith in Josh Gordon returning to the league because it's a simple phone call to Johnny Hot Dog, and they link up in the offseason, burn a few blunts, burn some trees. Yeah, maybe hang out with LeBron James for a minute. And they establish that connection off the field. Like, you can do that as a wide receiver. I guess that's not to say. It's tougher to do it as a running back because you typically have.
Yeah, you got your blockers and all that.
Your chemistry's got to be with your 5 offensive linemen.
Yeah, you're right about that. It'll be easier to kind of develop that chemistry, and that's what happened with a lot of those dudes during the lockout. You know, when they were are threatening the lockout. You know, when you had guys that were, you know, quarterbacks that were organizing. You know,
and Drew Brees got like activities. Damn near the whole team to come out.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not like it's going to be crazy. You know, crazy difficult, but it seemed like a very calculated measure that the league took to wait that long to draw it out and then suspend him. You know, basically on the verge of week 4 of the preseason
on the basis of a public outcry.
Yeah, it's just silly. Man. I mean, it didn't seem right. I mean, yeah, if you're gonna be dumb three times in a row, you deserve a little harsher penalty. But you know, it's tough for me to look at the apples and oranges there and say, well, you know, it makes sense. Because to me, it doesn't. So getting back to this whole thing, and you already kind of hit on the Goodell situation with when did he see this video. So you've already got these two layers with Rice and Goodell. So now it was like less than a week after Goodell rolled out the new policy.
The domestic policy?
Yeah, the new domestic violence policy, which, I mean, to me, is mega strict, but, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it's, you got to save face at this point. So the new rule was 6 games on a first offense, lifetime ban, Donald Sterling on the second offense.
That was like a day after that. You're talking about Ronald McDonald, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like a day after.
Was it that fast?
Yeah, it was literally like the next day after Goodell came out and said lifetime ban after the second offense that news story broke that McDonald hit his wife, or and fiance.
You know what I just realized? That's two Rays in a row. That's Ray Rice and Ray McDonald.
You remember when Ray Caruth stabbed that dude?
You remember when Ray Lewis allegedly got in on that murder?
Allegedly.
Look, man. And he played at the Super Bowl. Man. He played that, you know, that game. Just goes to show. I mean, you look back. I mean, you just look back at it and wonder. Well, you know, things don't always, dots don't always line up there. But yeah, so that's crazy. I mean, Ray McDonald, just wanting to toe that line and just really, kick sand at the line. Shortly after the new suspension rules are in place, he gets popped on allegations that, that he was putting hands on his pregnant fiance, 10 weeks pregnant.
That makes it like a double violation.
Yeah, it's like, come on, man. You know, it just, to me, I mean, it just doesn't, that's a bad idea.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're in the NFL, or if you're in any sort of profession that pays you multi-millions of dollars, don't hit your spouse.
Yeah, I mean, just keep your shit together, man. I mean, that goes out to Josh Gordon, too. You know, and I think we hit on this early on when we were talking about Cleveland, and we're talking about Josh Gordon. It's like, come on, man. You got all of this, all of these opportunities that you have in front of you. All you got to do is just, stay in line, man. Stay in your lane. Just chill.
Quit smoking pot.
Or don't smoke pot during the times that you know you're going to get tested.
That's what I'm saying.
You know? You get tested once a year.
Who was it that came out and said that they literally test you once a year and they tell you when it's coming?
Yeah, I had mentioned that before, and it was, I think, a year or two ago. It was on April 20th. It's like, come on, right, man. It's like, you know it's coming. You know the policy. It's like they're trying to tell you, look, man, this is how it's going to be. All you have to do is just be clean on this day, and that's it. And you can't, if you can't do that, man, you do deserve to get, to get your ass in trouble. I mean, it's just silly, and that's just on the pot smoking thing. Now this whole domestic abuse thing, I mean, that's a whole other situation, I think, as far as I mean, that's a criminal type of charge right there. I mean, you are abusing, you are hurting somebody. You can get arrested for that. You get the bracelets put on for that. So
I have a hard time comparing DV to pot smoking. I think it's too completely. It's not even apples and oranges, man. It's not even the same fruits. You know, it's like apples and beef.
I agree. It's not even, it's just, it's two things that NFL players do, but that's where the similarities end.
Right. So, speaking of drug violations, how about your boy Wes Weckler?
This guy. So the original thing, he got popped for amphetamine use, and he got a little 4-game suspension.
Was it amphetamines?
It was amphetamine.
It was Molly.
Well, that's the thing. They said it was amphetamine. He tested positive for amphetamines. So the first rumor was that he was on Molly, that Molly was what popped him, was what was in his system. And that it could have been the cause for him handing out $100 bills over the Kentucky Derby,
man.
when he was having himself a good old time after he had won a fistful of cash.
Now, granted, I've never done Molly before, but I would assume that would cause you to experience some erratic behavior and lapses of judgment, but I just have a hard time believing that Wes Welker is out there doing Molly. It just doesn't seem to fit his character at all. He's like a John Stockton type, if you ask me.
Yeah, I wouldn't put him at John Stockton choir boy like type.
Jeff Hornacek.
Yeah, he's got a little edge to him. He's not exactly, you know, white Jason Williams kind of got a little, you know. We'll touch on this later. He's not like Luol Deng. He doesn't have a little African in him.
No, man, he's not selling gold chains.
Yeah, he's not selling counterfeit behind the, you know, at the back end of the store. But, you know, point is, I couldn't see him doing that either. But I couldn't, you know, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. You know, I think he might try it.
Maybe. But it came out that it was ADD meds, so Adderall. And who's to say, was he actually prescribed this Adderall? Or was this like recreational Adderall? I mean, I'm not condoning recreational drug use. I'm not, you know, diminishing recreational drug use. But if you're in the NFL, you know, you carry a different set of guidelines on how to live your life.
Yeah, for sure. And I think ultimately that's kind of what we're getting at, is that you know what you're getting into. You know the rules you got to play by. So come on, man. Just go ahead and play by the rules. You're getting paid a ton of money. You're getting all these benefits. You're getting all this. You're getting this whole package. Here's the rules you got to live by.
Right.
Yeah, just go ahead and do that.
Don't bring a gun into a nightclub and shoot yourself in the
head. Yeah, let's not do that. Let's not do that, Plaxico.
Check this out, Plax.
Yeah, let's not do that with guns that weren't registered in the state of New York. Who has, you know, the strictest, you know, concealed weapons or gun policy in the state.
Check it out, Plaxico Burris. You are not Gilbert Arenas. That is not a gold-plated gun from Face Off.
There you go.
You have no business toting that in the club.
It was sweatpants that's going to cause an accident, like you shooting yourself in the leg. You know, come on. But anyway, I digress. Sorry about that, Plax, but you know, you had that coming. Good job, though. He did his time. Go ahead and let the man back in do his thing.
He was a fantasy monster the year that he came back. He did like he did 9 months in prison, and he came back to the leagues the next year. And I remember he was a waiver wire steal, because he had that one game where he came out and caught 3 touchdown passes for the New York Jets. And I wasn't quick enough to make the waiver move, and in retrospect, that was pretty much the only blip that he made on the radar for the rest of his career. Is he even in the league anymore?
I don't think he is, man. I don't even think he's like on a practice squad right now. Maybe he is. Maybe he's playing for Carolina. They need receivers still.
They do.
They signed Stephen Hill.
Did they?
To the practice squad.
Speaking of former New York Jets.
Yeah, there you go. The only reason I know Stephen Hill is because he was on that mega deep dynasty team that would co-pilot.
Hey, speaking of practice squad guys, shout out to Michael Sam. You know, Cowboys signed him on the practice squad.
Yeah, I like that. I like the fact that he got on there. I don't think you can call it. I mean, we had this discussion, and you know, let's open that up for debate. You know, is that a PR move? Is that a football move?
I don't know, man. I mean, at this point, I think it's a PR move. But then again, the Cowboys need linebackers, man.
They need
Sean Lee. They need all the help they can get. You know who else needs linebackers? The Atlanta Falcons. And I wouldn't mind seeing Michael Sam get signed by the Falcons.
I agree. And in fact, I wouldn't have had a problem if we had drafted him in the first place. We could pick him up in the, you know, third day, sixth, seventh round type.
Sure, man. If it was a seventh round pick, all day, man.
I mean, we cut a fifth rounder this year, you know, from this year's class.
So, we traded Akeem Dent for T.J. Yates.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I think, you know, good on him. I'm glad that he got to a practice squad. I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's more a football move. Than a PR move. I mean, I don't think the Cowboys need any PR. You know, they've already got a great stadium. They got an owner that, you know, is taking selfies with really kids, you know, that are his grandchildren's age. you know, riding on party buses with, you know, heads of the NFL referee committee and what have you. So I don't think they need the PR. The only reason that it was brought up is that the Cowboys did have three seventh-round draft picks ahead of where Michael Sam was drafted. Right. So, I mean, you just gotta ask the question. I mean, if they really wanted him, you know, you could have burned a seventh-round pick on him.
Maybe they didn't want him until they saw how he performed in the preseason. Shout out to Michael Sam for sacking Johnny Hot Dog. But honestly, man, you know what I want to know? Why didn't the 49ers make a move for him?
You know what I want to know? I wonder if Johnny Hot Dog dropped the F-bomb on him when Michael Sam got him on that, you know, on that quarterback sack.
Man, Johnny Hot Dog, Michael Sam got up and did the money roll thing, man. I thought that was hilarious. Rolled up dollar bills for that guy.
There you go.
You got, man, think if he would have signed with the Niners. That would have sold 100,000 jerseys on day one, man.
Oh, for sure. He would have developed a cult following, for sure.
He would have been Tim Tebow down in San Francisco.
As general society, man, what's the big deal? You know, these people are living their life and it's completely, you know, non-impactful on my own life.
Completely irrelevant on the football field. And I could understand the argument of keeping the team together, you know, the chemistry in the locker room and whatnot. If you have some homophobes in your locker room, which I'm sure every NFL team has, that could pose a problem. But the point is that you shut up all of those detractors with your play on the field. And, you know, to me, and maybe it's because I live out on the West Coast, but and I'm a little bit lenient towards that lifestyle. Not that that's a bad lifestyle at all. If that's your choice, that's your choice. It makes no difference to me. I mean, to me, it's the same thing as saying that, like, a gay dude can't be a doctor. You know what I mean? Like, what difference does that make on his profession or her profession, for that matter? Unless you're public-facing. If you're public-facing and you're of transgender status, then that makes sense. You know, you could take that. Okay, I'll give you that one. But in a case like Michael Sam, it's got no bearing. It's got no place in the argument. There is no argument.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point that you bring up. I mean, in any other profession, it wouldn't make a lick of difference, you know, what your orientation is, man. It's like, that's not even like, that doesn't even, that shouldn't even be raised as far as like, well, hold on now. Let's get this out in the open before we move on. You know, let's get one thing clear. I mean, and I get it, you know, the dreaded shower situation. But, you know, there's been so many sports players that have brought this up. I mean, if you think that Michael Sam is going to be the first gay athlete, gay player that you showered around, I think you're mistaken.
Horribly mistaken.
I think you're mistaken.
You want to talk about Eddie Lacy?
Dude, yes. So, again, good job, NFL. Eddie Lacy.
Yes. Eddie Money.
Eddie Money.
Take me home tonight.
Eddie Lacy got two tickets to paradise. Got himself a concussion during the season opener. Now, what are the implications behind that? One, any fantasy owner that drafted him, probably in the top five.
Oh, yeah.
Top five.
Oh, yeah. Top 10, solid. Top five on most boards.
Was probably having a heart attack when he, you know, when he got injured. And, you know, and then when it was confirmed he had a concussion, you're starting to panic. So that's one implication. The more interesting implication is that he was wearing a concussion-proof helmet during that game.
Is there such thing as a concussion-proof helmet, though?
If there is, he wasn't wearing it.
That's the same thing as saying that, like, this watch is water-resistant. You know, it should be a concussion-resistant helmet.
I agree. I have a water-resistant watch.
Do you? Up to 100 meters?
Up to 100 meters. See, and nice. It says that. So, you know, concussion-proof helmet. It might have that little disclaimer.
Right?
You know,
concussion-proof, up to 100 meters.
Yeah, up to, you know, up to 100 pounds of pressure.
Bad. But I tell you, who do you think is shitting their pants more? Eddie Lacy owners or Jamal Charles owners?
Look, man, to be honest with you, Jamal Charles owners.
Yup, because they took him like second, third.
Not just that. He got the dreaded three-letter bomb drop. High ankle sprain. That's what was confirmed today. I think Schefter tweeted that out.
Man.
High ankle sprain is one of them things, man. You can't really rehab that.
Ask Roddy White about a high ankle sprain.
Yeah, and that just messes your whole shit up.
The whole season. Done.
You're hobbled. the whole way through. You can't do anything without, you know, messing with your ankle. So, you know, a shout out, you know, and hearts out to, you know, Jamal Charles, you know, draftees. Y'all probably got him number one overall.
Nah, number two, man.
Who went? Who'd you say? Who'd you take at one?
The child beater, Adrian Peterson.
No, man. Yeah, I wouldn't take Peterson one.
Yeah, man, you crazy. You're taking Jamal Charles number one. You're insane. Here's what we know, though. Here's your waiver wire pickup of the week. Nile Davis. Go ahead and go get Jamal Charles' handcuff if he's still available.
Yeah, if he's still available, you better go ahead and put a high, high dollar waiver bid on him and hope you grab him. Nile Davis looked legit, too.
Oh, yeah.
He looked all right.
Oh, yeah. So you want to talk about Adrian Peterson? You want to go ahead and bounce into the NBA?
Well, let's just kind of preface that, and maybe we'll hit on this on episode 6.
Yeah, we're trying to go 2 episodes this week. We'll see how.
I think we can do it, man. I feel pumped up. Like I said, I was out for a week, man. I was laid up. I was nauseous. I was feeling awful. I was dead to the world.
You feeling pumped now?
I'm feeling. Man, I'm telling you.
You feeling Scott Cochran now? You feeling? Yeah!
If it don't hurt, you ain't doing it right. Yeah, man, I'm excited, man. I mean, like I said, we talked about this before. I mean, I'm ready. I hit the ground rolling, you know, running again today, man. I got back to work, got back in the swing of things. I'm able to goof off with the kids again. I'm able to do things. I'm able to function without feeling like I'm gonna throw up. So right. I want to try to knock out 2 podcasts. So let's do this. Let's kind of tease it and say, after you got Ray Rice. After you got Ray McDonald, now you got
Wes Welker.
Well, I'm just talking about the domestic.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Wes Welker is a whole other thing. Him and Josh Gordon can hang out.
Will Welker.
And socially do drugs. But Adrian Peterson, you're on the clock now. You're up. And, you know, to me, this hits personally home for me. You know, I'm a father. I got 2 young kids, one that is the age of the child that, you know, that was being discussed in this this child abuse case. So he's up against it, man. He got, you know, he's getting indicted by a grand jury. It's looking serious for him, man. I mean, this is one of those situations where he could do some time. And if he does that, you know, I'm thinking the NFL is gonna have to come up and they're gonna have to do something as far as, you know, suspending him too. The Vikings manned up, man. Even Chris Cluey tweeted out, shouted out, and said, "Hey,
Cluey, what up?"
Yeah, good job on. You know, he said he gave props to the Vikings for doing the right thing and holding him out from
deactivation,
you know, this week's game.
I heard he's gonna play this week though.
Yeah, he's active for this week,
man.
So it's like, hey, look, man, we're gonna do the right thing for 1 week.
Stay tuned. We'll touch on that next episode. I did see that the Radisson has pulled their sponsorship of the Minnesota Vikings. So your former employer has come out and said, you know what, we will not stand for this, regardless of how it shakes down. And hopefully we'll have more news on the next episode. But let's go ahead and bounce it to the NBA. We wrapped up all that LeBron talk. And one of the bullet points I wanted to go ahead and skip to was Nike matching Under Armour's bid for the Durantula, and you're talking 300 milli?
Yes, close to it. Very close to it.
He was already making, according to your notes here, KD's current deal was 7 years, 60 million.
It was small money compared to the money.
What, man?
It was only 60 million.
Only 60 million.
But when you put it in context and you compare it to what he got now,
it's a fifth of what he got now.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
it's 10 years though. 10 years with incentives, it could match, or it could go up to, it could escalate to 300 million, right?
Yes.
But he's guaranteed 10 million a year, I want to say. 10 million a year over the next 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, it was going to be.
I don't remember. We talked about it last episode.
It was major money. Under Armour came out and said, you know what? We're going to go ahead and make a move. We're going to take a big swing at this thing. And they did. You know, they put the huge offer out there. You know, the report was between 265 and 285 million. I mean,
the Under Armour offer.
Basically just daring Nike to match, which, you know, they smartly did. You know, it's in KD's contract. There's a clause in there to match, and they smartly did that. He's the next one up. You know, you got LeBron. You got the tail end of Kobe, and KD's, you know, KD's going to be the next big phase, you know, the next big superstar for Nike, and it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I tried to do a little bit of research,
a little bit of market research. I see that
Under Armour's basketball shoe market share.
Let's talk about the big dogs first.
Oh, okay, all right. Okay, Nike and Brand Jordan. I mean, it's not even close. 93%.
Padlock it.
Yeah, I mean, that's
padlock in a sock.
Yeah.
They're beating folks up with a padlock in a sock.
Yeah, I mean, they're just, you know, that is their, they are the basketball shoe, you know, market. Adidas has about 6%, and that leaves, you know, under 1% to share of
for
which,
the rest.
Yeah, for
the
everybody
rest of
else.
The market.
Anybody else.
Reebok, Asics, who else?
Yeah, I mean, all your, you know,
I guess Asics
your,
doesn't even make Converse.
Yeah,
you
know, does
N1
still
Nike.
Do a shoe? Yeah,
maybe.
Does Starberry count into that demographic?
Does Champion make shoes?
You know, I mean, all of the other ones combined for 1% of the market share. Under Armour claims 0.35%, less than half a percent of the basketball shoe market share. They do have some notable endorsers, and I looked them up. Stephen Curry.
Word.
Your boy, Brandon Jennings.
That is my boy.
Kemba Walker. He's all right. He's
UConn?
Legit.
UConn?
Yeah. Raymond Felton. So they're guard heavy.
Yeah, they need some bigs to protect that house.
They do. They must protect that house.
No wonder they're trying to sign KD.
There you go. Although, you know, he might defend the three. He's not defending the four.
Yeah, you're right.
Stretch four.
You know what I want, though? I'm not even a sneakerhead by any means. I've never owned a pair of Jordans in my life. I could never afford them, for the record. But Reebok pumps.
Yo,
what happened to the Reebok pumps, man?
Didn't those make a comeback for a little bit, for
I
a quick
they
minute?
Did. I never got another pair though, but I should go.
Yeah,
get
man, because who is it? It's that new young crowd. They got that hot little commercial where it's got Nerlens Noel, and it's got it's got a couple of other dudes, and they're just street balling it up. And I think that's a Reebok commercial.
Word.
But,
word.
Yeah, you know, it just goes to show. Under Armour was smart. You know, you got a big fish, you know, you got potential there. You got the possibility of, you know, being part of the package deal that gets KD into the DC metro area, hanging out with Alphonso Dunston.
Man, Alphonso lives in Athens, man.
Yeah, but he's from DC though. He's from the DC area though.
For sure.
He got out of DC, so, you know, he didn't die.
Still a Redskins fan though.
Yeah, he is. He's a true Redskins fan.
You think Kirk Cousins is going to take RG3's job?
Only until RG3 comes back. Look, man, I got RG3 on one of my teams too, man. I'm kind of hurt. He scored 3 points for me yesterday.
So what else we got, man? NBA news. You want to talk about the Philippine national team?
Let's do that. Let's do that because the Hawks is going to take a minute.
All right. So the Philippine national team, we took Croatia, the mighty Croats. Who did we decide to play for them? Kukoč was a
Croat. You know one name that just came to mind? Dino Raja.
Oh yeah, Dino. Boston.
I think he played. Yeah, I think he played there. I'm gonna look them up in real quick.
Right on. So the storyline is that the Philippine national team took Croatia to OT. We wound up losing in OT. For those of you that don't know, my brother and I are both 100% Filipino heritage.
Filipino.
We up in this beach, and Andre Blatch was the first. They signed him. They gave him like an honorary citizenship style, basically, so he could come play for the Filipino national team.
Oh, Lord. Is that what they're trying to do? Is that what Pacquiao's trying to do with Men of World Peace?
I think so, man. Well,
hey,
here's the
come thing. On, man.
Blatch is Black Filipino. Like, he's 50% Filipino.
I didn't realize that.
I didn't know that either. And I'm pretty sure he's the first Filipino-American in the NBA, as I recall.
Yeah, just because I never made it.
But so what's that bit about Pacquiao and the Warriors?
So, okay. Oh, real quick. I was looking at the Croatian national team. Dario Saric is Croatian. Top draft pick from this most recent year. He'll be there. He'll be in Philadelphia in a couple years. They'll still be rebuilding. I see you working 76ers. Quit tanking, man. So, Manny Pacquiao, he was talking about, I want to say, I think it was SB Nation. Somebody was talking about Manny Pacquiao is the is the third Splash Brother behind Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson. And they had a little picture. I guess he went to like a shoot around or something like that. And was hanging out with the Warriors.
Yeah, I saw the picture. He had the jersey on.
Yeah, so I don't know, man. I mean, like I said, you know, being Filipino, man, we think we're good at everything. And
it's because we are good at everything.
Yeah, we might
what
be.
You mean think?
We might be good at everything. But we know that we think we're good at everything. So he was up there, and he thinks he's the third Splash Brother. I'm going to try to pull that article up right quick.
Man, I am the best karaoke singer this side of the Mississippi. Recognize. But going along the lines of the Croatian national team, Tony Kukoc, Dino Raja, there he is, Jean Tabak, and I don't recognize any of these other names. Drazen, we talked about that last episode.
We did talk about
Drazen Petrovic.
Jean Tabak is now an assistant coach with the Croatian national team.
Oh, right on. Good for him.
What up, Jean Tabak?
What up, Croatian bigs?
Croats.
So, moving along, how about the Atlanta Hawks and that big old flaming pile of a mess that we got going on right now?
You know...
Or you want to wrap the Pacquiao story first?
I don't really... The only thing about the whole Pacquiao thing, besides him hanging out with the Warriors and balling up with them a little bit, is that he's trying to get... Ron to play on the in the Philippine League. So he's basically just throwing money, trying to get an NBA
a big name.
Yeah, just get a name to the league. I mean, it's very similar to what a lot of the, you know, the smaller European teams you know, do. Stam, you know, our buddy from Greece, you know, we'll tell you all about how a team like Olympiacos has been doing this for decades, you know, where they'll grab a NBA talent and bring them over there. I mean, it's good marketing for them. It is increasing their talent level. So it makes a lot of sense for everybody involved. I don't know, to be honest with you, I don't know where on the international basketball competitive ladder the Philippines falls. Probably fairly low. I couldn't imagine any of like the Asian areas really being overly strong as far as pushing basketball. I know that China is doing Chinese things and throwing large amounts of money at sports, and so I'm sure they've had made runs on, you know, major NBA players too. So
they've made runs at major NBA players and battle rapper Jin. This just in. I'm just kidding. I made that up.
I was gonna say, it's like, are you serious? You breaking news on the podcast?
Hell no.
Yeah, I mean, it was just really more of a little goofy little segue, you know, side note there, not a segue.
You know, Pacquiao should go after Allen Iverson, man, because, hey, I bet you AI still got a decent first step.
Yeah.
And I just pulled up this story right now. Man, I don't know how credible the news nerd is as far as news stories, but...
Man, Allen Iverson looking sad in that photo, though.
He's crying in the... You're going to cry in the car. But it says Allen Iverson was quoted as saying... He doesn't even have money for a cheeseburger. He was begging for change outside of Lenox Mall.
Come on, man. Ooh. Come on, AI.
That's got to be phony, though, right?
Man, we're talking about cheeseburgers.
We ain't talking about practicing, man.
Man, we're not even talking about a combo. Man. We're talking about a cheeseburger.
We ain't even talking about practice no more. We're talking about a kid's meal.
Come on, man. I hope that's not true, man. I really do. But you know what? You can't really roll with a story like that without somebody popping you for slander. So there might be a little bit of fire where you see that smoke coming from.
Man, hopefully not, because shout out to Allen Iverson, man. Go ahead and fly out to the Portland Metro, man. I'll give you the job, man.
For real, man.
We could just shoot a rap video or something.
That's it.
So you want to touch on this Hawks topic now, or you want to go ahead and save that for next time?
Well, let's at least set the foundation. So, okay, for those that are unaware, the Atlanta Hawks ownership has been a multi-headed beast for the better part of 10 years or so.
Man, let's just call a spade a spade. It's been a multifaceted shitstorm for the past decade or so, man.
It's been a train wreck.
Spirit Group?
Yeah, the Spirit Group has been an unmitigated disaster. It's just it's a perfect case of too many cooks in the kitchen. And it's just been, there's just been issue after issue, man. They can't come together on, you know, on, they can't, they're all pulling in too many directions. It's just screwing things up. I mean, it's a miracle that the team is still in Atlanta, to be honest with you, because there's just been so much chaos. That might have just been one of the best solutions is, hey, let's just sell the team. Everybody get out, move the team out of here, and let's move forward.
But so, Atlanta's a good sports capital, though, man. Like, everyone loves basketball there. Makes sense.
Yeah, it is. And I don't think it'll ever leave the state. I couldn't imagine the Hawks ever getting up and going. You know, as bad as the Falcons have traditionally been until the last couple of years, and as mediocre as the Braves have become, you know, Hawks could get on up in there and, you know, and dominate the pro sports market there. I hope we never see another hockey team ever again after watching two teams get up and leave. I don't even follow hockey, and that hurt me.
Man.
That's just because I'm an Atlanta fan. So.
So the big mess, the root of the mess, is some racist allegations that stem from an email?
Yeah, the initial thing, and this is where it gets weird. The initial thing was that one of the Hawks owners, the majority owner, Bruce Levinson, really, like, unexpectedly had said, he emailed the league, and he said that he is going to sell his majority interest in the team and essentially put the team up for sale because he had sent out this this kind of, not really racist email, but it was getting on those lines, you know. And we'll try to pull up the, you know, bits from that email. It wasn't very friendly towards you know, towards the African American community. He said some things, he regretted it, and he did the right thing, I guess, and said, hey, you know what, in light of Donald Sterling, I shouldn't be owning this team. And I thought initially, my feeling was, hey man, props for, you know, for self-reporting and then deciding that you can't, you know, you shouldn't function, you know, if you have these, you know, these, you know, if you have these opinions. But then it just started to get weird, man. I mean, just sticking with Levinson, then you start to wonder, was he really just waiting for a convenient excuse to sell the team? And he just figured, well, shit, this will do. You know? I mean, otherwise, it just seemed like really odd timing, you know, to just all of a sudden be like, hey, you know, I made a mistake, man. And to make up for it, I'm a self-controlling interest in this basketball team. That just doesn't, it seemed like a touch much at the time.
This is where it might help to have a news guy. I apologize. I went to pull up this email and a video queued up on the computer.
Hey, man, at least it wasn't an adult video.
Yeah, for real. Technical difficulties. Shout out to Peter North. But, so Levinson said he wrote an email 2 years ago that was inappropriate and offensive. So he's trying to own up to an email that was sent 2 years ago. So maybe you're right about he just picked a convenient time to go ahead and sell the team. Because, and I guess the email was basically saying that the black fans aren't as valuable as the white fans, in a nutshell, you know. He says, I trivialize our fans by making cliched assumptions about their interests. In example, hip-hop versus country, white versus black cheerleaders, etc., and by stereotyping their perceptions of one another, i.e. that white fans might be afraid of our black fans. By focusing on race, I also sent the unintentional and hurtful message that our white fans are more valuable than our black fans.
So, here's the thing.
In summary.
I mean, it's got a little racial charge there. Is it muted?
The quote wasn't as damaging as what Sterling came out.
No, it's not. And that's the thing. What Sterling's whole thing was just the ramblings of a senile old bastard. You know, that
trying to get his willy wet.
Yeah, that just honestly, I mean, it didn't make sense. It's like, come on, man, you're talking to your ethnic, you know,
mistress,
basically. How are you gonna get on her about hanging out with black people when you're hanging out? Isn't she like part black too? It's like,
she's half black.
Yeah, it just didn't make any sense. This, I mean, not to say that what, you know, what he was saying, you know, makes sense. But at least it does have a little bit of logic behind it. I mean, I'm not trying to say that, you know, that that I agree. You know, I mean, I don't think that you should look at it in that way at all, but, you know, at least it had some logic, you know, logical reasoning behind it. I don't know.
Man, it wasn't, you can't even really say that it had logical reasoning behind it. The dude was just being a little bit too literal and a little bit racist. But you know what pisses me off is that they went and implicated Danny Ferry in this. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man. He was goaded. I read an article that basically summed up the fact that he was goaded into the conversation, much like Sterling may or may not have been goaded into his conversation.
Right.
But,
and that's where things get really, really sticky. Because, yeah, then, like, the following day or a couple of days later, then this this conversation gets brought up with Danny Ferry, the GM, where he dropped it now, you know, the line that we mentioned earlier about Luol Deng having a little African in him, you know, having some, basically some Negro tendencies, you know, is what he was suggesting. Now, the article and the conversation made it seem like, and this was Ferry's and the Hawks' defense, that he was just reading a scouting report, is what was said. He was hurried into this conversation, into this big, you know, this big Friday. It's basically a Friday afternoon board meeting. Everybody's in a hurry. Nobody really wants to be there. They just want to put this together and say, hey, let's talk about free agents right quick.
Right.
So he's just rattling off bullet points on a list. Here's Luol Deng. They talked about other guys before. They get to Luol Deng, and he just rattles this off. And it didn't seem like he was being, like, you know, really negative and, like, being, you know, really, that's how he felt.
Nah, it seemed to me that there was a voice in the background, you know, a hype man that was like, hey, man, so what you think about Luol Deng and selling the fake gold chains, man? And Danny was like, yeah, he's got a little African in him. You
and
know,
see,
that's the kind of the context that I took it as.
That's how I felt too. I mean, it made a lot of sense, and it seemed like, because now the next layer to that, another one of the owners, and if you're keeping score, this is just owner two. Levinson is the majority owner. Michael Guerin Jr. is another one of the owners. Apparently, the rumor is he had it out to get both Levinson and Ferry.
Well, there you go.
So he's the guy this is the conspiracy theory. Throw your tinfoil hat on. They're saying that Guerin set them both up, and Ferry walked right into it, into this late afternoon meeting where nobody cared. Ferry's known for being a little bit, you know, he was a little bit kind of on edge because he knew that, you know, it was taken from his time. So he was just being real quick and real succinct. So it made sense. Hey, he's just reading off a scouting report. So he just read it verbatim. So then for me, I felt like, hey, you know, give this guy a break. He's just reading a scouting report. Leave the man alone. He didn't really mean what he said. And hey, maybe he was just joking around anyway. It seemed like the scout report might have been just joking around the whole time.
He probably just laughed at a racist-ass scouting report that Guerin Jr. submitted.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, come on, man. But one more thing I wanted to bring up. There's a copy of this email from Levinson. This is from the USA Today, so a little bit more credible than News Nerd earlier. He says, and I quote, "My theory is that the black crowd scared away the whites, and there are simply not enough affluent black fans to build a significant season ticket base. Please don't get me wrong. There was nothing threatening going on in the arena back then. I never felt uncomfortable, but I think southern whites simply were not comfortable being in an arena or a bar where they were the minority. And if that's the case, then these southern whites need to move out of Georgia, period. Because I don't know if you're aware of this."
Yeah, I mean, it's... The demographic is pretty diverse in Atlanta, and I it just seems a little silly to me, and that's kind of getting a little bit more towards the Sterling situation. It's like, look, man, that seems a little bit less logical. If you're worried about black folks, man, what are you doing hanging out in downtown Atlanta? Who do you think you're gonna run into?
Man, exactly. And my whole thing is that if this, to me, it's no secret that rich white NBA owners are a little bit racist. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man. Let's call a spade a spade. If you're a rich white NBA owner and you employ predominantly African American players, you know, in the heart of downtown Atlanta. Like, come on, man. It just goes to show, you know, you shine a light on anything, it's going to cast a shadow.
Right. And you're right. I don't think it's a stretch to think that these highly affluent, highly privileged owners might look down upon the much less affluent and much less privileged, but almost equally and probably more idolized players. And notice how I took the whole race thing out of it. If you just look at it and, you know, in black and white and remove race.
Pun intended.
Pun fully intended. You could see that happening, you know? And hey, like you said, man, you call a spade, you know, these guys probably harbor a little bit of that, at some level, you know, whether it's, you know, to the point where, you know, where they want to, you know, be mean-spirited about it, or they want to just kind of joke amongst their, you know, close group of friends, what have you. There's varying levels, but to think that it doesn't happen, I mean, I think it's short-sighted.
Exactly. I mean, the fact remains that these rich white people have grown up in a society where it has been socially acceptable to be mild to moderately racist, you know, and they're from the old school. You know, these dudes are old enough to remember when they had separate water fountains. You know what I mean?
It's very true.
Things like that. So I hate to wrap the pod on such a negative note, but, you know, we're right around that time. We're actually about 15 minutes over.
Yeah, and, you know, it bears discussing. And we'll get into it a little bit more. You know, let's spin it positive. One of the potential owners for the Hawks that has come out and publicly expressed interest, aside from ourselves, of course.
Aside from the FCK podcast.
Yeah, aside from ourselves. I mean, it has been reported that Dominique Wilkins is very interested in being part of the new ownership team that buys the Hawks and keeps them in the city of Atlanta.
Man, I wouldn't be mad at that at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't either, man. And you know what? I would that would influence me to buy Hawks gear even more so.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's an icon. There's another guy that was just talked about as being a potential suitor. He's also come out. He's a big music industry guy. I think Lil Jon's one of his clients. So I think that I think things are headed in the right direction. If it's racism and stereotyping that we're looking to get out of, then I think the Hawks are looking have some very good potential buyers, lined up, in their short sights.
Word.
So let's wrap it. You know, let's put an end to that. We'll get back into it, for episode 6. Want to get more into the Hawks. We'll talk more about Danny Ferry. We'll get an audio clip. There's an audio clip now that's out. We'll talk about that. And I want to put a little poll out on Facebook. You guys keep an eye out for that if you haven't checked it out already.
What's the Facebook address?
We'll get some more.
Facebook.com/FreshCoastClick.
And click is spelled KLIQ.
You can find us on theclicknation.com.
Yeah, we're also on The Click Nation. We are now, the podcast is now on iTunes. It's also featured on Stitcher Radio. So you can check us on that. We got the YouTube. What we've been doing there is getting just kind of cross-posting. If you don't want to download the entire podcast, if you don't want to, if you're just looking to
go ahead and stream
the
it on
podcast,
YouTube.
You can stream it on YouTube. You can do all of that also. I mean, I highly suggest check us out on theclicknation.com. Great website run by Tim D-O-double-G and the rest of the Click Nation crew.
Shout out to the Click Nation.
Yeah, we are featured there. Check us out there. You can stream it on there. You can also check us out on YouTube. We are just on youtube.com/freshcoastclick as well. And check us out. We'll be tweeting more on topics at hand, both before and after, you know, each episode. On Twitter, we are at FCK Pod for the Fresh Coast Click Pod. So check us out on there, you know. And again, you know, tune in, you know, for the next episode. It's gonna be a good one.
FCK Pod, check it out.
Chia. Turn me up some. Turn it.